Welcome to the Storycraft Cafe. Come in, grab a cup of your favorite beverage, and get ready to join the storytelling conversation. Storycraft Cafe is brought to you by Dabble, the ultimate cloud-based fiction writing software. Here we're going to bring together storytellers from all walks to encourage and empower you to craft your best story. And thank you for joining me here in the Storycraft Cafe. I'm your host, Hank Garner. Today, super excited to have Jill Chalvis on the show with me. She has a fantastic new book. It's called The Bright Spot, and it is available everywhere now. It's we have been kind of playing email dodge for a couple of weeks now because Jill, had the dreaded virus weeks ago, and thank God she's doing well and able to join us today. Jill, so sorry you went through that, but I absolutely love the book, and I know so many other people are too. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, and thanks for letting me postpone when I didn't have a voice. I only have half my voice, so you'll have to bear with me.
I understand, and anyone who has been on that journey in the past, you know exactly what Jill's been dealing with, so we were more than happy to extend some grace there for sure. Jill, I love to start the show with a fun question to kind of break the ice and to get things going. And one question that I love to ask people is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
My mom likes to tell the story that as soon as I could talk, I started making up things and, you know, telling stories that she called lies that I called stories. So I have always, always been a storyteller.
I love it. I love it. Was there ever a time in school or maybe a parent that kind of recognized this storytelling gene that you had and maybe encouraged that, you know, told you that maybe you could do more than tell lies, you know, as I did the air quotes there.
My family uses the other side of their brain. They're all technical geniuses. And so I think I was a little, not the black sheep, but not quite understood. And I always was telling stories and writing stories from middle school. I think I had tons of short stories, and I went to college and I took a creative writing class, and the teacher was very literary, and he told me not to quit my day job. And I wish I could remember who that person was so I could let them know, hey, guess what my day job is.
right.
So what, I kind of had to find my own way.
That is, I've never understood people that feel the need to just put that out there. I can't even wrap my brain. Why would you ever say that to someone?
Because if you're a literary brain, and I write very, you know, you're always going to get happy ever after. You're going to get adventure and shenanigans and sexy guys and smart girls having a good time. But you're going to get happy ever after, guaranteed. And I think, you know, there's just some people that's not their bag of tea. You know, I don't know. I don't know why you don't want a happy ever after in this world right now.
Right. Or any world for that matter. But yeah, especially right now in 2024, we need some happy ever afters for sure. And I love a well-written literary story that sometimes doesn't resolve at the end or resolves in a way that I'm not happy with. And then I love to pick up a Jill Chalvis book after that to put my emotions back in, you know, proper perspective. I think there's room in the world for both. I don't understand why you have to trash one or the other. It just makes no sense.
If you're a romance writer, you're tough because you've already been trashed over and over again by people who just don't understand. And I'm okay with that. I don't care. Just don't buy my book because you're not going to like it.
And that's okay. We're all different. We all want different things. That's whatever. So what was the first story that you wrote that you hoped would be published, or maybe that you had an experience where you had tried other things and you said, this is the time where I'm going to set out and do it. What did you have a moment like that where,
yes,
okay, this is, Okay. Tell me about it.
I definitely did. When I went to college, I was a journalism major, and okay. I thought that I wanted to be a journalist and tell real stories that happened to people. And I would do my assignments and I would turn them in, and my teacher would not pass me or give me a C. And this is a straight A student here. I'm not used to that. So I can remember going up to her and saying, "What is the problem here? What am I doing wrong?" And she said, "Well, you're lying," because I was adding in, I was embellishing. I made it fiction, not nonfiction. Right. So that was a real moment for me where I realized I'm not going to be that serious journalist. I'm going to be a fiction writer. And then just started writing. Nothing stopped me after that. I was so thrilled to be telling myself my own stories.
Did you ever work as a journalist?
No. In fact, I worked as an accountant. So I was also using the other side of my brain. It was very painful for me and not natural. But, you have to pay the bills. And back in the day, that's what I had to do to get myself through college and eat. Yeah. I'm fond of eating. And then once I sold my first book, it was a few books before I could do that full time. That's, it's not an easy gig. Anybody who's out there trying, it's a great job, but it's not easy.
What was the first book that you published?
Oh, gosh. I think it was called The Long Way Home. And you can't find it anymore. This is before digital age. It's nowhere. And I have the rights back to it, and I'm not putting it back out. It's just not good. Nobody's first book is good. I'm sorry. So you'll never see it, but that's what it was.
Was that the first book that you had written and finished? Okay.
Yes.
All right.
I wrote it. I finished it. I sent it off. And this was before really the internet. So in those days, you had to go to the library, you'd get these big tomes of all the publishers and what they were looking for. Oh, yeah. Then you'd get another big tome of all the agents and what they were looking for. And so you had to query, you had to send 3 copies out to each person so they could pass around the office. And so that's what I did. And I was still working during the day, bookkeeping, and I was writing at night, and I had 3 little babies. And it was a very, very busy time. And I had no guarantee that I was ever going to make money. This is before indie. So I needed a traditional route. And I just finished that first book and sent it off, started the second book. And I think I was on my third book when I heard back on my first book. And
wow,
I just got really lucky that way. So there's no manuscripts under the mattress or anything like that.
It's so funny because we think of the digital era having affected publishing, which it absolutely has.
Absolutely.
But it also affected querying at the time, because now we're used to sending an email, attaching a Word document, and it's up, it costs you nothing to do that other than your time. Well, back then, if you're sending 3 copies, you're having to physically send printed copies of your manuscript, and there's no telling how much that cost to send it in, by the postal service. And it was a serious investment just to query.
Yes. And, really poor at the time, barely making ends meet. And I can remember going to like the printing shop and with the disc, floppy disc, and can you make 3 copies of this, 400 pages times 3, and you pay by the page. And then you had to buy the box. There was a certain kind of style box.
Right.
Print out the query letter. And then you had to go to the post office, lugging all of these things, stand in line, pay a fortune for all that. So it was quite an ordeal.
Wow. That is amazing. So you referenced a minute ago that there was a point where you reached and you could now do this full time.
Yes, but not because I was making money, but because I could no longer afford I couldn't afford the daycare to work outside the house. So that was the real reason for quitting. And I had just sold my first book, and I'm a firm believer in manifesting. So at that point I said, "You'd sold your first book. There's no reason you're not going to sell book 2 and book 3. I just didn't let myself have the doubts. And in truth, I could have at that time wallpapered my house with all my rejections. So this was not an easy thing. I could have wallpapered my neighbor's house, my whole street's house with the rejections. It's very difficult to learn to get a tough skin. You're putting your heart and soul out there, the story that you told, and either you get a letter, "No, this isn't for us," with no explanation why, or you get too much of an explanation why. I mean, it's heart wrenching. So it's not only physically expensive, it's emotionally expensive as well.
Yeah. That, that I guess that's investing in yourself, you know, when, yes. when you say that I'm just going to make it happen. That is just,
I wasn't going to go away. No, I was, keep writing, because I did realize that every book I wrote got a little bit better. So it's about, you know, you're not born with the ability to write. Like, you have to earn that. You have to sit your butt in the chair and write every day. And so I was just convinced that I loved it so much, I wasn't going to go away. So someday somebody was going to find me, and I just kept writing when I could. And that's manifesting at its finest, because then it happened. And then after it happened, I had put, like, I was writing category romance back in the day for Harlequin Silhouette, which is, you know, boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl. And it was a formula, and it was a genre, but I loved it. And it did become my bread and butter, but I did long to write bigger stories. So I had started doing that on the side, the bigger stories, knowing that hopefully someday my numbers would be such that I could sell the bigger stories. And that was a thrill when that happened, because then I could have multiple protagonists and more stories and adventure and mystery and suspense, whatever I wanted to add in there, I could, there was room for it.
You said that you could see yourself getting better as a writer, and everyone goes through that. The things that I write now, I look back 10 years ago and I, you know, kind of cringe at,
exactly.
at, you know, but that's just the reality of life. But Do you still tell the same kinds of stories, even though you've obviously gotten better as a writer? Is there a hallmark to what is the Jill Shalvis type of story?
The hallmark now to my, what I love to do is write warm stories about, usually in a small town where there's shenanigans and there's mysteries, where you could leave your car unlocked and it won't get stolen, but you can't keep a secret. You know, that kind of thing I love. And I was born in New Jersey. I grew up in LA, so I'm a big city girl, but at heart, we moved to a small town, and I realized that all the cliches are true. They're so true. And I just was fascinated because I'd never lived in a small town before, you know, where you go to the grocery store and you run into your dentist in aisle one, the principal of the high school in aisle two, which is never a good idea. And then like your gynecologist in aisle three, like those things really happen here. And so I realized that was my heart and joy, was going to small town, writing about the humor of it and telling deeper stories. And so that's what I'm doing now. And I've been doing that for the last 10 years.
What do you think it is about? Because I tell those kind of stories as well. There's something about a little community where everyone has a role, and it doesn't really matter who the characters are. There are these archetypal characters that kind of for some reason show up in every community. You know, when there's a group of people that sort of bonds together, there are these roles that take place for whatever reason. And it's kind of funny. But what do you think it is that resonates with people that, you know, these types of stories?
I mean, I think people just like to, if you're reading romance or rom-coms, I think people want the fantasy a little bit, but they also want to maybe see themselves in a story. So what I love about a small town is you can do all these different types of people, and someone's going to see themselves in something. They're going to. And I mean, I love to make fun of small towns, but it's from a deep love of the small town. So I'm not like being mean spirited about it, but we're making fun a little bit of the cliches. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
The book that just came out, The Bright Spot, I went with my family to a very small family owned farm, not too far from here. I live near Lake Tahoe. And we went to this farm, and it was spring. So they had all the baby animals were out, and we walked around with all the kids in my family. We have a very large family, and it was such a feel good place that's where I set The Bright Spot, was in this struggling tree farm with rescue farm animals. And so that's the comic relief for the characters. And I love doing that.
You have said before that you write, I'm going to butcher the actual way you say it, but you write series that are tied together by place, not necessarily by characters, where it's...
Well, it depends on the series.
Well, yeah, but...
So definitely that's true of my current series, The Sunrise Cove, which is set at Lake Tahoe. They're all the books are the same setting at Lake Tahoe, but it's standalones within that series. And I did that because readers are divided. Some readers want connected stories and some readers want to be able to pick up book 7 and not worry about 1 through 6. And I get that. So I have both. I love both.
Which one is more enjoyable for you as an author? Do you ever get to for your standalone series, do you ever get to the end of one? You've wrapped everything up nicely. It's a satisfying read for the reader, but this character kind of lingers in your mind. Well, I wonder what she's doing now, or I wonder if he, you know, ever did anything with this dream he had, you know, whatever it is. Do these characters kind of want to hang on?
Every single time that happens. So it's really a struggle for me. I think deep in my heart, I like writing the connected stories. So my next series, I'm starting a new series right now. As a matter of fact, my next series will be a connected series, and I'll make that really clear. So readers who don't like that, they're okay. They're going to be okay. But that was really tough in the Sunrise Cove series. And the series before that is called the Wildstone series. Both of those are just setting at the connected, and maybe you'll see some of the businesses reappear in other stories like the bar and grill or whatever, but the characters, they're a standalone, true standalones. And there was so many times where I was like, oh shoot, I wish I hadn't done that, because I want to tell this person's story. So in fact, in The Bright Spot, that happened to me, and I ended up writing a secondary love story. So there's two love stories in The Bright Spot because I could not leave that one behind. I had to tell the story.
I love it. So it's kind of an Easter egg for readers who have maybe been with the series for a while. That's fun. Mm-hmm. That's fun. How many books have you published now?
It's over 100.
What?
But I honestly, it's somewhere between 110 and 120, somewhere in there.
That is wild.
But you have to remember, some of those were novellas, for instance.
Right.
Or sure. Those very short categories. I mean, it's just in the last 10 years
that
I've
count those too.
Yeah. They're actually just as hard, to be honest. But
oh, yeah. So do you, looking back on when you began your career to now, has your writing process changed?
Yes. When I first started writing, I had three kids under the age of 5. And so it was very sporadic. And I can see it now. And I look back at those old stories, you know, they're not quite as smooth as I would like it to be, because how can it be when you're writing in 5-minute increments?
Right.
You're just trying to survive. So as the kids got older, it got easier. Everyone finally went to school for hours at a time. And so I was able to not write so early in the morning and so late at night. Both those things are hard for me, but that's what I used to have to do. Now I can write, I can get up, shower, brush my hair even, have breakfast, and then write. So that's a luxury.
Getting to sit down to write clear-headed is amazing,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
You are you a planner or a pantser? You know, we love to stick writers in one of two camps, and you know, either you write by the seat of your pants and have no idea where you're going, or you know everything about it before you start writing.
I used to be a pantser. I used to just drive myself right off the cliff and get going. And that was when I was writing those smaller stories, and it was a lot easier because you keep the whole story in your head. It was much, much easier. But when I started writing single titles, the bigger stories, I had to write it down. And then not only did I have to write it down, also when I was doing connected stories, I had to start, like, I was keeping a Bible on the side of who everybody was and how they were connected and what things looked like. And it just all of a sudden became, I need a roadmap. So years ago now, maybe 15 years ago, I started plotting in great detail. So it takes me weeks before I start a book because I need the roadmap. I don't always follow the roadmap, but just having it is a sense of comfort.
Yeah. You talked about those smaller books that you wrote in the beginning, and those were for a very specific purpose, but you always dreamed of telling these bigger stories. Mm-hmm. and bringing in these different aspects of, you know, maybe mystery or, suspense or, you know, comedy or whatever. Have you felt that some of these subgenres, some things resonate differently with readers? Like, do you have readers who are like, I'm just here for Jill. I don't care what she publishes. I will follow her. Or do you see a certain audience likes when you add some suspense to a book, but maybe they're not here for the rom-com? How do you, How do you decide what you're going to deliver and keep all of your readers coming along with you?
I mean, it's hard. Readers have changed too, and their tastes are more sophisticated now and more specific. And I do try to give the readers the story they want, but I also don't feel like you can write to the market, and you got to write to your heart. And hopefully your heart is what your readers are wanting. So I do have readers who are like, they're going to buy my next book, and I love them, but I also need new readers. So I do try to keep my ear out for what's happening, what's going on in the world, and what people are loving. And I think the subgenres are great. I think romance is such a great place right now. People can find exactly what they want, and they can do it in many different formats. I love that.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to make sure everyone knows it's always going to be a romance. It's probably always going to have sex in it. And it's probably always going to have some dark and some funny, because I think those two go really good together. As for other things, I do try to change everything else up. So each book is truly different, because that's the hardest thing when you've written this many, is making it different enough from your last book.
Right.
I love putting a little mystery in. I love suspense. I actually love magical realism and trying to figure out how to do that without pissing anybody off. But, you know, one thing at a time. Well,
I'm sure you'll find a way to do it and to do it well. You mentioned something that is, can be kind of a dirty word to some people, the right to market idea. And it can be difficult, because if you're constantly, you know, with your finger in the air, you know, trying to see which ways the wind is blowing, you're constantly going to be chasing and be behind the trends. But on the other hand, you can definitely see where what certain things are resonating with certain readers. How do you balance that and try to keep up with trends without just driving yourself crazy trying to be, you know, write the book of the moment that, you know, may or may not happen?
I'm not sure that I'm capable of going that far with it. I get the trends. I listen to what readers are loving, and I take the parts that I love and I want to write, and then I do that. So for instance, right now I'm just lucky that things like Grumpy Sunshine, Enemies to Lovers are really hot right now. I love those tropes. So I'm going to write those tropes, and I have. And in fact, I did in the bright spot, that's Enemies to Lovers, classic Enemies to Lovers, work romance. I mean, I put a lot of tropes in there because I love them. Yeah. I can't write something I don't love. So I do the best I can to stay on trend and keep readers happy while also delivering something I believe in and love.
Gotcha. Not at all. What is your writing and publishing schedule like these days?
I'm doing two a year, usually in January and June is when they come out. And that's a very comfortable pace for me. I've tried to fit in a third book, and occasionally I can, but it's probably going to be a novella or something like that. I think I might be able to do three next year. I'm not sure. I'm just trying to keep my head above water and make my deadlines.
Do you have a daily writing schedule? I know you talked about, you know, that you can get up, get a shower, wash your hair, and eat breakfast. And, you know, do you clock in, so to speak, you know, at your desk?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I can't let my muse win, because if I let my muse win, I would never write. And this is a job, and there's a mortgage, and I like to eat. So right. I do keep, and also I'm ADHD unmedicated. So I have to keep a schedule for myself, or I will never sit in the chair. So I try to do a goal of the minimum of 2,000 words a day. And I can't get up until I do that. So some days I can finish by noon, and some days I'm, you know, late into the night, but it's just the way I can keep my story fresh in my head, keep everything straight, is by keeping regimented.
Gotcha. The Bright Spot is book 5, I believe, in the Sunrise Cove series. Yeah. Do you have a grand vision for where the series is going and how long it'll last?
I've already written the next two books. So it will be,
I think I saw book 6 for pre-order on Amazon, maybe.
Yes. So The Summer Escape comes out in June, and it's up for pre-order everywhere if you're interested. Okay. I love that one. It's it also has a blink and you'll miss it second dairy romance, but the main romance was just, it's all action, adventure, and mystery, and it's sexy. And I had so much fun writing that. It's basically a scavenger hunt for a lost treasure. And they're not the only ones out there hunting. So that's another enemies to lovers. I had a good time with that one too.
Do you have a certain schedule? Do you try to get, so many words a day? How do you know when your writing session is done for the day?
Well, I do the 2,000 words a day minimum. So I can't quit until I have that much at least. Some days I go to 2,500, but I almost always stop at 2,500 simply because it's hard work and my brain is usually tired by then. And I find if I go too hard, if I let myself go to 3,000 or 3,500, then the next day I don't want to write. My brain's like, no, thank you. So that's the schedule that works for me. But that said, every writer is so different and everyone has their own way of doing things. And there's really, because this is so subjective and objective and personal, I've never seen people have the same exact writing schedule or the way they do things. Like I write a really fast, very rough draft and I don't look back. Most writers that I've talked to, they write a chapter, they perfect that chapter, and then they go on. I cannot do that. It's impatience. I need to get to the end. I'm telling myself a story and I need to get to the end of the story and know it's going to be okay. Because I don't know that. But in chapter 3, in chapter 15, or wherever I am, and everything seems so messed up. How am I going to ever fix this? I cannot handle going back to fix something until I know. Did I lose you? Oh, shit. Let me see if I can.
Oh, Jill. We're having a bit of technical difficulty here, folks. Sorry about that. Hi, Jill.
Hi, I'm sorry. I'm in the mountains. And
no, it's perfectly fine. It's perfectly fine. When you get to the end of that rough first draft, what is your, because I like that idea of just not looking back, just get to the end of the story and, your creative brain is engaged and, you're not looking for the little details that might not match up or, dots that might not connect. But then when you finish that and you set it aside and then you change hats and you put your editor hat on and your rewriter hat, then what is that process like for you?
I mean, that's when the real work begins.
Yeah.
Because I have been having a great time telling myself a story. And also sometimes I didn't even use quotation marks. I mean, I was really it was just pouring out of me and it's a hot mess. My husband has standing orders. If I die in the middle of a rough draft, nobody may ever see the rough draft. You tell him it wasn't written because that's how bad it is. I don't want anybody to see it because then I got to go back and I have to add in the heart and the soul and the humor and make sure people are feeling things. And maybe I forgot to tell you where the scene took place. I have to add in all the senses and this, it's at least 3 more drafts after that for me.
Gotcha.
And that can take me as long as the planning and the writing took. The editing to me is where the real work is done and where the real magic happens.
Does your word count typically grow in that process?
Yes. So I always cut myself short when I'm writing the dirty rough draft because say I'm aiming for 80,000 words. Sometimes that draft comes in at like 55 or 60 and I don't sweat that at all because I'm adding in, I know I have so much still to put in. And it just almost magically comes in anywhere between 80 and 90,000 words. It's just instinctive. And I can never explain why it happens, but it happens every single time.
That's amazing. Did it, that confidence that, this rough draft is 55,000 words, but I know it will end up at 80 or 90,000. Did that confidence build over time or was that just an instinct?
It's not confidence. I really struggle every single day through the rough draft. I cry. I dump scenes. I rewrite scenes. It's just a mess. It's a hot mess. And I'm a hot mess. And I am in a panic and an anxiety ridden state every moment of that first draft. And I don't know why. I've done it 100+ times. You think I would have faith in myself? I never do. And then the second draft, it's so much work. And I think, this just totally sucks. And it's not usually until like the fourth draft where I'm like, wow, okay, I don't hate it anymore. And then I feel better about it. It's just, it's so painful. I don't know if I'm the only one that it's so painful, this job.
I've talked to people before that said I like feeling that I have written. I just hate to write.
Yes.
it's kind of like that. Like I love having a finished book, but man, it is pain and torture to get there sometimes.
It really is. So there's no confidence usually. It's mostly just the manifesting thing. I just convince myself that if I just keep going, it'll all come out.
Hi, Jill.
We've had a lot of high winds and we are having a lot of snow. I'm so sorry.
Well, no, that's fine. So we'll just take that as a sign from the folks higher up than us. Jill Chavez, The Bright Spot, available everywhere now. Go to your local bookstore, pick up a copy of it. We'll also put links in the show notes where you can grab this in paperback or audiobook or Kindle edition. Jill, how do you feel about your books in audio? You know, audio is massive right now. How have you seen that affect your writing career?
I personally listen to books. That's how I read a lot of times when I'm hiking for a day or whatever. I love audio so much. I hope it's here to stay forever.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to have links to where you can grab it in any format that we talked about, or go visit your local bookstore, support local books. Jill, if people are just discovering you and want to dig into your massive back catalog and all the stuff that you're up to, where can they find you online?
On Instagram and Facebook, just Jill Chavez. I have a website and I have the blog, and I put up on Instagram, I put up a lot of pictures of my snow, of the lake. We live in winter wonderland, so people are always fascinated by that. Oh my gosh.
That's our episode for today. There's so much more to come as we talk to authors about the craft of writing, but also the business of publishing. Be sure to subscribe to the Storycraft Cafe podcast in your favorite podcast app so that you never miss an episode. The Storycraft Cafe is made possible by Dabble. Writing a book is challenging. Your writing tool should not be. Dabble is an easy-to-use online writing tool packed with helpful features that allow beginning novelists and published authors to create amazing stories. Visit us at dabblewriter.com and start your free trial today. Thanks for listening.